This is Full Logic Reverse. I'm your host, Mike Thornton. We hope you'll stay tuned. I am very, very pleased to have with us Jeffrey Schuer, who is the author of the book, The Soundbite Society, Television, and the American Mind. Jeffrey, thank you for joining us on the program today.
Great to be here, Mike.
Well, we appreciate that you were able to be with us today. The Soundbite Society, Television and the American Mind is a really great title for your book. Talk, if you will, about how we are becoming a soundbite society as a result of television, and then we can talk about the conclusions that you come to regarding how television is affecting our political process and actually, I mean, through that, our the very fabric of our nation, in my opinion.
Well, I agree, Mike. You're asking a tall question there.
I am.
It goes back quite a ways for me personally, and I think most people agree when they think about it that we're saturated with electronic media, and a lot of people feel it's hard to know where to start thinking about it. It sort of goes back to what McLuhan said, whoever invented or whoever discovered water, it wasn't a fish. And we're all in that water, so it's hard to get outside of it to see how television affects our lives and our thinking. So that was sort of the starting point for me, trying to figure out what television does and thinking specifically about it politically at the end. But I started off just as a parent worrying about its effects on my kids and that kind of thing.
When you're talking about what television does, perhaps maybe the place to start is to talk about your views on television in the way it purveys information to us. I mean,
right.
Does that make sense?
Yes, it does, Mike, and that's sort of the way I approach it, looking more at the form than the content. A lot of writers have looked at the content of television and soap operas and tabloid TV and stuff like that. I'm looking more, in a sense, as McLuhan did, at the form, at the way in which television communicates, the fact that it focuses us so powerfully on immediate events that are in front of the camera, on things that are very concrete and specific and dramatic and tend to be very personal, at least in the sense that they focus on one or a few individuals who can fit on the screen, and they tend to focus on emotional more than intellectual messages, or, and I would argue overall, on simple rather than complex. And that's sort of an important point of my theory, too, that television radically and uniformly simplifies the world for us.
That, in essence, to some degree, is going to lead us to the conclusion in your book, one of the conclusions in your book, that television is actually much more favorable to conservative, what might be considered to be right-wing types of messages, correct?
Correct. That's the other part of my argument. And the two arguments, although they go together in my book, don't necessarily have to be hinged in that way. In other words, people can argue over whether complexity is inherently liberal and whether simplicity is inherently conservative. I argue that they are. That's part of what the book is about, and the other part is that television simplifies, and when you put the two together, you get not quite a syllogism of that the Greeks would approve of, but you get an argument that television helps the right and hurts the left.
Jeffrey, when you're talking about how television supports the simplistic, if you will, and correct me if I'm not explaining this, because certainly you have done a tremendous job in this book of explaining it, but how television to some degree supports the simplistic and makes the complex, it in fact ignores the complex, as I understand it from reading your book, or tries to at least.
What television ignores, Mike, is context, causality, ambiguity, and also disparities between appearance and real. appearance and reality. And those are all dimensions of complexity, as I argue in the book.
Talk how television does that.
Well, as I said, by focusing on the immediate, the personal, the dramatic, the emotional, it's an eye, and it's a very simple eye. It's an excellent eye for certain things. And what I don't want people to think is that I'm arguing against television or saying that it's bad. Television is bad at some things and great at others. It does some things that no other medium can do. And I also don't want people to think that I'm against simplicity across the board. I do think simplicity is more hospitable to conservatism. I happen to be a liberal, and I argue the case more from the liberal side. But I also think we should be a little bit more agnostic or tolerant about other views than we are in our society.
When you're saying that...
Let me just
go ahead.
Put that another way.
Please do.
I want to distinguish between simple and simplistic. And I think television tends toward simplicity and sometimes toward the simplistic. But there is a dignified simplicity about conservatism in certain of its spokespeople. And I'm certainly not saying that all conservatives are bad or that television is only a tool of the far right. So I want to modify that a little bit before people get the wrong impression.
When we're talking about television and the rise of the political right, that these two things have as more and more people have come to rely on television, we've also seen this corresponding rise in the political right.
Sure.
And that's a very, very major argument in your book, correct?
Yes, and Christian conservatives are part of that, the way televangelists have used television to broadcast very conservative messages. There are a lot of dimensions to it. I talk about it in the first chapter. I think, you know, television inherently is a fairly narcissistic and asocial activity, watching television. So it's already not really conducive to more integrated ways of thinking. I think of it more as a door around someone or a wall around a viewer rather than a bridge to other people or a way to invite people to think in more complex and integrated terms.
We've talked just briefly about how television ignores complexity and process kinds of oriented things. Can you talk about how television supports the simplistic message without any judgment of whether that is a good or a bad message, but how it supports that and some examples of how it supports this sort of simplistic conservative message and why the conservative message is more amenable to television?
Yes. Well, it's on several levels. One is a purely technological level. Television is a medium of images and not of text, or it's not ideally suited for platonic dialogue. And if you look at the talk shows on TV, they're shout shows. They're not thoughtful. They're not considered arguments. They're ideological food fights, and the participants mostly are on the center to the right. John McLaughlin, Robert Novak. I mean, they outnumber the people on the left, and especially on the farther left, by far. So there's a cultural level, an economic level, on which the fact that television is run by giant corporations and not by cooperatives or governments, not that I'm saying it should, but those all tend to a more conservative view. And what I'm also saying is that the focus on the minutia of life, on objects and individuals and actions, and not on broader conceptual horizons, that also weights television toward right-wing messages and away from the left.
One of the examples that I saw was a message that is simple, that lends itself, for example, to television is cutting taxes, for example.
Yeah, I mean, look at all of the sound bites that have infiltrated our political discourse. Tax and spend, read my lips, law and order, get tough on crime, just say no, right to life, things like that, family values. Those are all essentially conservative sound bites. Where are the sound bites, for example, for collective bargaining, Head Start programs, affordable housing, job training, protecting jobs while balancing that against protecting the environment. Those are all liberal issues, liberal parts of the liberal agenda, and they're inherently harder to get into sound bites. Sometimes it can be done, but only by really compacting the message. Some brilliant soundbite artists like Jesse Jackson or Mario Cuomo can do it occasionally, but they're really compacting the liberal message, whereas a Rush Limbaugh or a Novak, someone like that, is giving the message of the right in a purer form in those soundbites.
Well, let me ask you, this is a question that may or may not be appropriate right at this moment, but why is it that conservative politics lends itself to these easy soundbite messages where what we might refer to as liberal leftist politics and agendas doesn't?
Good question, and a hard question to answer, but my book argues that it's inherent in the nature of what makes them left and right, that the left is more complex and the right is simpler, that is the essential axis of differentiation around which we argue in our society. So I'm not trying to avoid or complicate the question, but I think that's the basic answer to your question, is that's what makes left and right different, as opposed to, there are other differences on other levels that relate to it, like over equality and justice and opportunity and things like that. But my view is that those are all reflections of a deeper difference over complexity and simplicity, and where the bounds of the individual are as opposed to society or community or what have you.
We're talking with Jeffrey Schuer, author of The Soundbite Society, Television, and the American Mind. Jeffrey, I'm thinking of the kind of pervasive nature of television, and you talked about that with the fish describing water analogy, if you will. It seems that as people get more habituated to television and the way that it conveys information, that it would get harder for people to even be able to deal with the more complex messages of the left. And so there becomes this sort of circular kind of thing happening. Does that make sense to you?
Circular, perhaps, in the sense that there's no obvious solution. We're not going to get rid of television, as Jerry Mander hoped in his book, Four Arguments for the Elimination of Television, which, by the way, is a superb book written 20 years ago. We're not going to get rid of television. And what I am saying to the right in my book is television is really on your side. What I'm saying to the left is television is really against you or against us. We have to work as hard as we can to make it work for us, but there are limits to the medium in trying to project more complicated arguments and more complicated messages and values.
Are you ready to take a phone call?
Sure.
Caller, you're live on the air.
Yeah, I was wondering what you thought, if there was something in your book. And I didn't get the name of your book, so maybe later you...
The Soundbite Society.
Yeah, on the subliminal message theme?
That's a good question. I don't address that. There is a book about that I reviewed many years ago, so long ago that I don't remember the author, but the title of it is The Clam Plate Orgy. And if you go to your library and look in the catalog, you may find it. It's an interesting book about subliminal advertising, which has been going on for many years. Now what they're doing that I think is more relevant and disturbing is they're compressing movies and even radio to fit more advertising in, more conscious advertising, if you will.
Well, you know, you bring up a couple of points, and one is in part of the book, The Soundbite Society, you talk about this sort of compressed episodic nature of television and how by that structure it also works to simplify and encapsulate thought and messages, correct?
Right.
The other thing I'm thinking about is that television, of course, is something that depends heavily on images. And I was sharing with a friend that I was at the Seattle WTO conference and waiting to attend a press conference by Charlene Barshefsky. And I watched a couple of State Department people spend, oh, maybe 5-10 minutes, you know, just carefully folding the American flag that was going to be behind her for the CNN shot. I mean, right. What the images and the way these images are created, I mean, while they may not be, you know, quote unquote, subliminal advertising like backward masking or something like that, the fact that these images are crafted in the way they're crafted to evoke emotional responses, I mean, it's a
absolutely,
very powerful
Mike.
Part of it.
Absolutely. And not to be too conspiratorial about it, but if you go back to Reagan and Bush and their image handlers, they were masters at propaganda and getting their candidates on the air with a flag behind them. Bush at the Flag Factory in New Jersey, Bush in Boston Harbor. It was pure manipulation, pure manipulation. There was no argument going on there. You know, if one dissected and deconstructed spots like that, political spots like that, or even news, they were even in many cases news segments for the networks that were so carefully staged by the Reagan and Bush people that they were virtually ads. You could deconstruct them and give counterarguments, but that's not what happens when you watch TV. You just see the images and they influence you.
We're talking with Jeffrey Shoer, author of The Soundbite Society, Television, and The American Mind. Caller, you're live on the air.
I was just thinking that your guest seems to be characterizing conservatism as inherently more visceral and liberalism as inherently more cerebral. And I don't really think that's the case. I think it's a fairly recent and fairly local in terms of just the United States phenomenon that you know, the right has adopted this strategy, which has been used successfully in the past by such extreme left leaders as Joseph Stalin and Mao Zedong, who were very successful at using that kind of visceral response to get the kind of control over people that they wanted. And that's just the general comment I wanted to make.
Yeah, I think that's an interesting comment, and it does raise issues about my thesis that I could deal with, but they get into some depth and complexity themselves. I mean, you can see left-wing messages in the photographs of Walker Evans or Jacob Riis or even in some films. There are emotive messages that mobilize people on the left, just as there are cerebral messages that motivate people on the right, and there are certainly intellectual conservatives, but I think their core values are simpler. They're for smaller government, less regulation, more sort of blanket laissez-faire, blanket freedom for the individual, and less control of society. I think a liberal society is a freer and safer and fairer one, but it's also a more complex one.
That's a very interesting statement that you make, that on the one hand, the message of the conservative is, well, for more freedom, quote-unquote, but then you turn right around and say that you think a liberal society is freer but more complex. Can you talk a little bit more about that?
Yeah, I mean, on balance, I do, and it's sort of a philosophical point, but there are ways in which regulation can make us freer if we don't perceive the government as being the only impediment to freedom in society. By controlling corporations, for example, it can make consumers freer. There are a lot of ways in which having no laws or having small government doesn't necessarily leave us freer, except in an anarchic sense of freedom than in the kind of freedom that Hobbes theorized in his State of Nature. So Western philosophy has been dealing with those things for hundreds of years, but we're still faced with these antitheses between a simple sense of freedom and a complex sense of freedom.
We're talking with Jeffrey Shoer, author of The Soundbite Society. Jeffrey, can television in and of itself in all of its complexity and in all of its simplicity, can it be made to be a more fair medium for the discussion of what we might, for just sake of argument, say these sort of two opposing forces?
Well, I think it could be made somewhat more hospitable to the values and messages of the left, Mike, through certain reforms. Certainly, I would like to see campaign finance reform, for example, which relates directly to the use of television to convey political propaganda messages left and right. And I would like to see the public reassert its public interest in the airways and not giving away the digital spectrum to the giant corporations that are seizing it for their own use. And that's it's essentially a public trust that's been given over to the private sector to the tune of about $70 billion in value, and that's just the digital spectrum giveaway. Even Bob Dole called that one of the biggest giveaways of public resources in American history.
Well, I think we can agree on that. Telecom Reform Act was...
The Telecom Act was an absurdity. It wasn't discussed in the Congress or in the public, and it was designed putatively to increase competition, but of course it led to an orgy of further mergers and further consolidation, as we all know. And that's not the way we should be going. I'd also like to see, as a lot of other media critics have called for, a sort of a public information ramp on the superhighway, a public service sector to the superhighway instead of the public TV we have now, which is sort of a failure.
There are two questions that come to my mind. One is, in looking at the analysis of the technology of television, if you will, mm-hmm. it almost seems that just in the way that television technologically works, it would be very, very difficult to have programming that would to function on the small screen to be able to provide a venue for the discussion of the types of complex process-oriented issues that we are equating with liberalism right now. I mean, that the box itself makes it hard for that to happen, regardless of the regulatory structure around it.
I think that's a good point, Mike. I mean, in a sense, the television is a medium for the few to talk to the many, or the one to talk to the many. And we haven't seen real interactive TV yet, but I think when it comes, at least for the foreseeable future, it's going to be a commercial device. It's going to be a way of getting people to register their consumer preferences rather than a new tool of democracy. I'm very skeptical about that. I don't know what's going to happen in 10 or 20 years. Nobody does. But the way I see TV evolving toward a computer television shared environment, that's exciting in some ways. It involves a lot of little enhancements and a lot of conveniences, but I don't see it radically altering the basic act of watching TV. We're still going to watch TV, and if we have 500 channels, we'll still be watching I Love Lucy reruns or Seinfeld reruns. there's not going to be a whole enormous new stock of content to fill the pipeline. So I don't see TV changing as fundamentally as some people think it is.
Caller, you're on the air.
Good point.
Well, I'm thinking, why doesn't he get on? I noticed there's classes in different kinds of film work, and maybe he can, you know, with this new internet thing, form some group that can do something. You know, instead of complaining about what isn't working, how about making something that is a positive force?
That's a very good point, and to make something that is a positive force starts with an eloquent complaint, and an eloquent complaint is, in some sense, what I'm hoping my book will be.
The other question that I wanted to ask, Jeffrey, was, and you brought this up to a certain degree, and that is the question of the internet and what it seems to me in the limited time, several years that I've been involved with being on the web and all of that, that it started out moving in this direction of this sort of free-form hodgepodge of access to information, but it's quickly making a turn towards traditional commercial television.
Absolutely. I mean, just as television itself did, Mike, in the 20s they were talking about a much bigger public sector for television. Herbert Hoover was against any private radio. He wanted radio to be completely in the public sector. That's extreme, but I think we have drifted away from a vision of electronic media that would have involved much more public access, much more public programming, and less commercialism, and that's a tragedy of the 20th century in America. What happens with the internet, whether it becomes highly commercialized and a highway littered with billboards, it looks like it could happen to a significant extent that way. There may still be niches of creative individual production as well. I don't profess to know, but I'm certainly afraid that the commercial forces will dominate.
Well, it certainly seems that when we're looking at the large media mergers that have been going on and continue to go on with AOL, Time Warner, and all of that. I mean, I'm thinking about our last caller's comment, and I think it's a very valid comment. The thing is you can go and take a class on how to make film.
Right.
The question is, even if you make a really good film, how do you get it to where anybody can actually see it?
Exactly.
You can make great television programming somewhere. The technology is actually getting cheaper, but the ability to get it out through the pipeline to where enough people who can see it
or hear it. And that's an economic factor that has to be considered when we talk about whether we want 8 or 10 giant corporations running our entire media universe. But there's another side to it also, Mike, and it's a complicating side, but it has to be brought in. As long as there are areas of excellence and diversity and independence that consumers can get to, you have to ask why more consumers aren't looking for it. And I think the answer there is that we have to broaden the whole scope of the discussion and look at how people are educated to be intelligent information consumers and informed citizens. And maybe we're not doing enough there. Maybe there's not enough media literacy teaching going on. People are not getting out of high school wanting quality journalism. I think that's another side of the problem, too.
I think you bring up a tremendously excellent point, and it's one that has kept coming up over and over and over again in the last year or so that I've been doing this program, and that is that we need to, and I believe in grade school from the very beginning,
absolutely,
to be instructing and teaching
media literacy. We could get rid of journalism schools and teach people to be better media consumers rather than media producers, and I think we'd be much better off. And I realize it's an argument that starts to sound a little elitist if it's driven too far, but the elite that I am hoping will emerge in the 21st century in America is an elite of every American consumer, as an elite democratic citizen, leaving nobody out. So to want to see more people be better educated for democracy is not an elitist view in my view.
We've been speaking with Jeffrey Schuer, author of The Soundbite Society, Television and the American Mind. Thank you for joining us for this edition of the program today. I'm your host, Mike Thornton, and it's been my pleasure to be part of the team bringing you Full Logic Reverse. If you'd like more information about FLR, you can contact us via email, flr@jps.net, or by telephone, 530-271-0804. We invite you to join us next time for another edition of Full Logic Reverse.